charity without chastity. Father Hardin is a master of logic. His faultless reasoning compels the believing Catholic to accept this challenging statement. Once this premise is digested, the need to practice chastity becomes mandatory. The unchaste atmosphere in our beloved country is even more appalling. The acceptance of widespread immodesty, even among believers, defies reason. The sickening immorality of American society compels reform. The Luciferian conspiracy of the media requires disclosure. What can be done? Listen to Father Hardin lay out a course of action.
First of all, I thank you for the privilege of being here and speaking with you. I took the liberty of slightly revising the title of our conference. It is simply, Without Charity, No Chastity. We are living, I would say, in the most sex-pervasive century of human history. Sex activity is a preoccupation of the media, of social communication. Sexual pleasure for millions has become their principal satisfaction in life. Sexual portrayal is the underlying theme of the audio visual arts. Sex experience has become the main theme of 20th century literature, which, not surprisingly for most Americans, is fiction, the novel, and the titillating presentation of sexual experience. For millions, modern mysticism is sexual experience. Every so often, we find someone saying something about this plague of eroticism. But generally, it is taken for granted, the widespread acceptance of sex education is only one phenomenon of a plague-stricken society. In my judgment, however, the future of a society, and certainly the future of Christianity in any country, and with emphasis in our own country, depends on the restoration of Christian chastity. In practice, this means the restoration of Christian charity. What then is our theme? And I do have a theme. Better, I might call it a thesis. It is very simple. Chastity is a barometer of charity. As chastity goes, so goes charity. And as charity goes, so goes a society. which remains only as Christian, and I would say only as civilized, as it practices chastity. Whole nations have lost their moral sanity. Now some subtitles. The first, charity, the foundation of chastity. What we are doing is relating chastity to charity, as effect is related to cause. For the Christian believer, there can be no true chastity without its fundamental ground or source, which is Christian charity. There is, I assure you, much more locked up in this sentence than the few words may seem to imply. What exactly are we saying? We are saying that the practice of charity, as the Savior demanded, is a rock-bottom foundation for what Jesus also prescribed, namely, unqualified chastity. This demands some careful explanation. That charity proclaimed by Christ requires the selfless love of others to a degree and to a depth never before known in the history of the human race. It is nothing less than loving others with a love like that of the incarnate God, a love that is willing to die for the one whom it claims to love. Oh, how the word love has been, what shall I say, prostituted. It is, moreover, a love that knows no boundaries. Unlike the love prescribed in the Old Testament, Christian charity is not limited to loving one's neighbor. In practice, this meant loving those who were, again in the Old Testament, one's kindred spirits, persons related by race or blood, persons who love us, and therefore, because they love us, therefore, they are even, by all the laws of psychology, lovable. And now, when God became man, he revolutionized human psychology. Christian charity loves the stranger and the unfriendly, the unkind, and even the openly hostile. we apply these qualities of Christian charity to see how they are the seedbed of chastity. What did the Savior tell his followers? He expected of them the practice of chastity. He told his Mary's followers how they were to be two and only two for a lifetime commitment and sacred monogamy. What else was Jesus commanding except a lifetime of selfless charity of one man for one wife and one wife for one husband, an unqualifying lifetime loving fidelity? There has never been a religion before Christianity. There is not now. There never will be any religion demanding of its followers lifetime fidelity and loving monogamy except authentic, honest to God, Catholic, Roman Catholic Christianity. Every single break in Catholic unity over the centuries, every single one broke over this. Demanding the right to divorce and remarry. Remove charity from Christian marriage and the sacrament of matrimony disappears. Oh, it pains me to say this, but say it I will. My good friend, working at the Roman Rota, which is in charge of deciding on contested marriages in Rome, told me our biggest problem in Rome is that so many members of the hierarchy in the United States no longer believe that Christian marriage is indissolvable. Talk about heroic charity. Personalities change. Emotions do not remain the same. Husbands and wives get older. The bodies advance in age. And people's temperaments alter accordingly. People have moods, high and low. And Christ says that two people are to remain faithful to each other until death. My God! That's the right exclamation. My God! Only God become man would have dared make such a commandment, because only God could provide the grace to make it observable. No wonder even Christ's disciples were overwhelmed by the Savior's teaching on chaste monogamy. They meant it when they said, "But Lord, after he told them, one man, one woman, until death." Seems to us, they said, better not to marry than to be bound to a lifelong loyalty to one husband or one wife. In the same vein, Christ insisted that married believers may not, better cannot, dissolve their marriage bond and, quote, remarry. At the root of divorce and remarriage is a loss of faith in the power of divine grace to keep husband and wife bound to their selfless love, even though the partner, a defined article of the Catholic faith, even though the partner may have been unfaithful in his or her married fidelity. So too, the acceptance of whatever children God may wish to send a husband and wife, the widespread practice of contraception and sterilization, and the evil of homosexuality are all directly traceable to a selfish lack of charity. A couple want the pleasures of intercourse, but not the burden of pregnancy. They want the satisfaction of sexual intimacy without being willing to accept the responsibility of rearing a family. There is such a thing as loving a person who does not hear it, of loving a person who does not yet even exist, but whose very existence is affected as the fruit of my love. This, in fact, is what our faith teaches us, is the explanation of our own existence before God brought us into being. We did not exist. His love gave us being. His charity gave us ourselves. Except for his almighty love, we would be what we were before we became what we are, exactly, mathematically, nothing. We exist only because of love. So too, parents are said to procreate their children. This is not a figure of speech, but stark reality. In the mysterious designs of providence, parents are privileged to join with the Creator's almighty power to bring offspring into the world. God brings out of nothing an immortal soul into existence. My parents, by the cooperative love, provide the body into which that soul can be infused. Love on the part of God, love on the part of the parents. My next subsection, lack of charity and sins of unchastity. Our focus so far has been on selfless love or charity as the foundation of marital chastity. Marital chastity is only as firm and solid as marital charity. There is another dimension to the relationship of chastity and charity. This is the flood of inevitable sins of unchastity as a practice of Christian charity wins and worst of all dies out.